I'd like to impose a call of the Senate.
Senate's under call. Senator Pogerbiller.
Mr. President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with, the sergeant-at-arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Mr. President, members, the House is now discussing House File 2695, and my intent would be to just have Senator Bach explain Senate File 2568 in the context of what House File 2695 will be when it comes over. When it does come over, if it comes over, I would then move to suspend the rules and take that up for discussion, amendments, whatever. So, Mr. President, if that's okay, I would yield to Senator Bach.
It's fine. Senator Bach, discussion on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. President and members. First, Mr. President, I want to thank you for all the effort that you put into this bill. Many of the provisions in here were in a bill that you carried last year and that passed the Senate but was not taken up by the House. And to Senator Saltzman, who spent countless hours working on the angel investor provisions of this bill. Members, I've often called this bill the jobs bill. And the reason is, and many of you know, I've been a carpenter all my life. And I know what unemployment feels like. And there's something very painful to me going on in Minnesota. You know, on January 2nd, the first Friday of this new year, 228,471 Minnesotans got an unemployment check. And that was a new state record. The next week, on January 9th, the number went to 240,398. Minnesotans got an unemployment check, another new state record. And every Friday this year, more than 220,000 Minnesotans have received an unemployment check. Tens of thousands of others have quit looking for work. But the most troubling thing to me is what's been happening in the most recent weeks. Members, for the last 4 weeks, February 27th, 414 Minnesotans got their last unemployment check. The next week, on March 6th, 493 Minnesotans received their last unemployment check. On the 13th of March, 546 more Minnesotans received their last unemployment check. And on the 20th of March, another 515 Minnesotans received their last unemployment check. Members, in the last 4 weeks, 1,968 Minnesotans have received their last unemployment check. What is going to happen to those families? That's why I've called this a jobs bill, and I can't put a number on how many jobs are in here. I don't think any of us can, because there's so much uncertainty right now in the financial markets. It's real hard to know whether some of the incentives that we have in this bill are actually going to directly lead to employment. But I can say this, it's worth a try. Someone has to do something. So there are a number of provisions in this bill that have been around this building for quite a while. The first one is the Small Business Investment Tax Credit, commonly referred to as the Angel Credit. I remember when I came over to the Senate in 2002, my friend and our colleague, Senator Dallas Sams, was the author of that bill. And that bill's been around here, had multiple authors before and after that. Senator Langseth carried it 1 year, I remember. I've carried it, Senator Saltzman has carried it, and others. And I don't know if the idea of investing in small Minnesota startups is going to be successful, but I think we all know there are a group of very creative, very innovative Minnesotans who have ideas that may lead to the success of new startup businesses in Minnesota. And I just want to tell you, share with you two short little stories of Minnesota businesses, because the Angel Credit may lead to the creation of another one or two success stories here in Minnesota. And the first one is a story about a company that started in my district. Matter of fact, in the town that Senator Erickson Ropes grew up in. And it was in 1902, I pulled up the history this morning. In 1902, five businessmen set out to mine a mineral deposit for grinding wheel abrasives. But the deposits proved of little value, and the new company quickly moved to nearby Duluth in 1905 to focus on producing something they were going to call sandpaper. Years of struggle ensued until the company could master quality production and supply, and the company moved to St. Paul in 1910. In 1916, they paid their very first dividend. In the 1920s, they invented waterproof sandpaper. In 1925, a young assistant inventor invented masking tape. In the 1940s, they diverted all their attention to defense materials and invented the reflective sheeting that we see today on highway markings and magnetic sound resonance tape. In the 50s, they invented Thermomax copying process, Scotchgard fabric protector, videotape, and the Scotch-Brite cleaning pads that we all use in our homes. The markets further expanded in the 70s and 80s when they went into pharmaceuticals, radiology, and energy control. In 1980, they invented Post-it notes. Members, today, that company has $23 billion in annual sales, operates in more than 65 countries and 28 states, and we all know them as 3M. There's another company in Minnesota that started in a partnership in April of 1949 of two brother-in-laws. One of them was taking his graduate studies in electrical engineering at the University of Minnesota at the time, and he did part-time work repairing lab equipment at Northwestern Hospital in Minneapolis. The demand for his services continuing to grow, he left his studies at the U. His brother-in-law quit his job at the local lumber firm, and they started a medical equipment repair company. They set up shop in a garage in northeast Minneapolis and started a company by the name of Medtronic. After the servicing business grew, new employees were added. Medtronic expanded into a second garage and eventually occupied an apartment. It wasn't long before the medical professionals asked Medtronic's engineers to not only repair equipment, but also to modify it or design and produce new devices needed for research. And the company's manufacturing business was born. Members, in 1948 in a garage. Minnesotans are very, very innovative, very creative people. But what we do know is access to capital, especially in these financial markets, is very difficult. And I do believe that the Angel Credit could lead to the creation of the next Medtronic or the next 3M here in Minnesota. What we know is other states are making these kind of investments in their small little startup businesses that can't go to a bank because all they really have is an idea. And there is a group of investors that take considerable risk to finance these small little startups, and what this bill is asking us as Minnesotans to do is share in some of that risk to develop new products, new companies, and I think it's worth a try. So the bill spends in fiscal year 11 about $17 million in a tax credit to investors that invest in these small little startup businesses. In the out years, in 12 and 13, it's going to spend about $12 million a year. In addition, in this bill is a tax credit that will piggyback on a federal tax credit for renovation of historic buildings. Members, there is no industry sector in our economy that is suffering more than construction. And the whole vendor community that services the construction industry, vendors like architects and engineers and the whole supply chain related to the construction industry. The historic building tax credit will cost us about $3.8 million in the first year, and then about $10 million a year in future years through FY15. But I do believe that we are going to see some renovation of some historic buildings around this state that, absent this credit, are not bankable. By the state being willing to put a tax credit into these projects is like putting equity into a project and just might make some projects bankable and some people would go to work. There are a number of tax increment financing provisions that we've carried in previous bills. The creation of a new kind of tax increment districts that will help stimulate redevelopment inside of core cities called a compact development TIF district. There are a number of provisions in the bill related to the economic development districts that we currently have in law that liberalize some of the use of that money if they're going to create jobs immediately. There's a proposal in this bill that Senator Anderson was the author of last year that the governor recommended this year to create the governor called it, and I think Senator Anderson called it, a Car Z zone, a Job Z program for the Ford plant in St. Paul. There are a number of provisions in here that could lead to the phased construction out at the Mall of America. And I just want to make this very clear. There is no state money in the expansion at the Mall of America. It just gives the city of Bloomington the opportunity to impose some adder taxes on the mall property and to allow the phased construction of the mall expansion. In 2007, when I passed those mall provisions into law the first time, the economy was much different. And many of the anchor tenants were in place for what we thought was going to be a $2 billion expansion at the Mall of America, doubling its size. And we all know what's happened to the economy since 2007. And now there's no developer that could hold a project of that magnitude together in this economy. So it allows for the city of Bloomington to allow the phased construction. And I do believe a couple very large projects over $100 million each in size are likely to start construction in the next year because of the provisions in this bill. There are a number of smaller tax increment financing provisions that are members' bills. There is one for the city of East Grand Forks. There is one for the city of Oakdale that allows for the redevelopment of the old Oakdale Mall property. There is one for the city of North Mankato that we actually carried in last year's omnibus bill that the House wouldn't take last year, that this year they've agreed to take. There's one for the city of Cohasset that gives them a little flexibility under tax increment that will lead to a construction of a project there. And then there the repealers in the bill, members, there are two. There is a repealer of a 1996 law that limited the city of Bloomington's authority to exercise tax increment financing relative to the old Met Center property and the Kelly Farm out at the Mall of America. This repeals that limitation on the city of Bloomington so that they can exercise tax increment financing authority on additional parcels of land where the city has some development planned. And then the second repealer in the bill is in the 2008 transportation bill, the House put a provision in that created a low-income fuel credit. And it was intended, or at least the Senate was told, because it was crafted by the House, that it was intended to offset the cost of the increase in the cost of gasoline, because we raised the gas tax by a nickel in 2008, and the thought was to offset the cost of that additional regressive tax increase. A tax credit on your income tax form was created of $12.50 for an individual, $25 for a household, to offset the additional cost of the increased price of gasoline because of the tax increase. Members, that's the other repealer in the bill. It repeals that low-income fuels credit. It was very poorly crafted. Matter of fact, you don't even need a car to access it. So I believe that there is a better use for that tax credit money, and that the better use for it is to cry, rather than buy 3 or 4 gallons of gas for a low-income person, we use that tax credit money to try and create a job for them. I think it's a much better use of the money. So members, that's kind of the contents of the bill. There are some smaller provisions in here. One, Senator Dahl, we actually passed the bill today that allows for special assessments on your property tax to pay for energy improvements that you might want to make to your home or your business. There are some additional uses of tax increment for housing replacement districts. We added the city of Brooklyn Park to that list. They currently are not eligible for that program. And then we increased the number of housing replacement districts that a city could TIF from 50 to 100 units. And then in the cities that are eligible for it, and then we added in the city of Minneapolis, they went from 400 to 500 units that the city of Minneapolis could put under the housing replacement tax increment district provisions in law. So members, that's the context of it. I don't pretend to think that somehow this is going to put thousands of Minnesotans to work next month. But we have a lot of people hurting out there. And it's the best effort I've been able to come up with over the course of the summer and the fall and during this session to see if we can put some provisions in law that might stimulate some additional economic activity and put some additional Minnesotans to work. So members, I'd appreciate your support. We need to wait for the House file to come over before we can actually take a vote on the bill.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Bach, I commend your efforts to identify a jobs bill, to do what we can here to stimulate the economy. I appreciate that. My question to you, Senator Bach, if you'll yield.
You will yield, Senator Ortman.
My question is, what is the justification for not simply returning the low-income fuel tax credit back into the highway user fund, because there's a shortfall there as well, and I'm hoping you'll address that. If you'll recall, Senator Bach and members, many of us argued very strenuously against that provision because it was poor policy. And we all agree, I think, now that it's poor policy, but why isn't the best place for that funding back into our roads?
Senator Bach.
Well, Senator Ortman and members that don't serve on transportation and taxes, just a little reminder of what this tax is. It's the motor vehicle sales tax, the sales tax that's paid on leased cars. If it's paid on new purchases, it does go into the Highway User Trust Fund and is spent on transportation. And that was done by a constitutional amendment. The constitutional amendment did not include that sales tax when it's paid on leased vehicles. So that money has been flowing into the general fund, and the House made a decision in 2008 to take that money, it's about $30 million a year, and to spend that money on the low-income fuel credit on an individual's income tax return. I'm simply saying that money's in the general fund today, and today it's being spent on the low-income fuels tax credit. Most people in this room probably have their own idea of how they would spend $30 million if they had it at their disposal. My thought is the best way to spend this tax credit, if we leave it within the tax bill, instead of do the low-income fuels tax credit, they're really the better use of it, is to create a tax credit, and there's a whole menu of them in here, to try to do job creation. But certainly, you know, somebody could offer a bill next year and change this and direct a different pot of money to this bill. That's certainly possible. There's nothing special about this pot of money that it has to pay for this bill, except to say that there's not new general fund money out there to pay for this kind of spending. So you have to take it from someplace currently in the budget. And so what I'm proposing to do is just redirect one tax credit over to a menu of other tax credits that might, I think, provide for a more economic stimulus than the way that the current tax credit that's in law. But there's no, Senator Artman, there's no reason somebody couldn't introduce a bill next year and redirect that $30 million to some other purpose, and then once this is in law, it just would get paid for somewhere else in the general fund.
Senator Murphy.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And Senator Ortman brought up the one issue that I was going to bring up, and I've talked to Senator Bach about this. I believe that this bill is sorely needed for the job creation that Senator Bach talked about. Unfortunately, using this mechanism is going to put into play in the future raiding this money again and again and again for different purposes. Now, when people voted on the constitutional amendment some years back, I believe that they voted believing that all this money was going to be captured and put towards roads and bridges. Unfortunately, because this is classified differently than, because they are leased vehicles, because it is classified a little differently than regular vehicles, it was left out of the formula, and I think it was left out inadvertently, and I should say the formula for the constitutional amendment. Senator Bach, you are correct. The constitutional amendment did not provide for this, even though many of us thought that it was part of the package. But folks, we're going to have to come back, or you're going to have to come back next year and fix this, and fix it in a way much like the Invest Fund was fixed, the overall fund was fixed to come to transportation. Phase it in over a period of years so that the general fund, hopefully because of this jobs bill and other things, will start to see a little life to it and start dragging it back into transportation, because that's where it belongs. And quite frankly, I do believe that we need to do this with other monies that are acquired by the state through taxation. If it's taxed on a certain item, let's try to direct that taxation so that the benefit is in that arena instead of, you know, three jurisdictions over or whatever. People in the chamber know what I'm talking about. Anyway, Senator Bach, I'm going to vote for your bill today, and I'm going to support it. But in the future, I would hope that this gets cleaned up.
Senator Bonif.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, too, rise on this same issue. I have carried a bill for the last several years saying that this very fund would go not just towards transportation, but would follow the exact path that MVEST has taken, and it would be divided in the same fashion that MVEST is divided. And I appreciate Senator Murphy suggesting that we do this next year, but I would say even more strongly, we should not phase it in newly starting next year. We ought to say that this money goes consistent with the MVEST money, and that in fact we have done our constituents a disservice, that when they said on their, when they checked yes and said they want, when they buy a car and they pay a tax on that car, they want that money to go for transportation. That's what they said. They didn't say if I buy a car under a leased arrangement, oh, send that money a different direction. They didn't make that distinction. They said when they buy a car, the taxes they pay ought to go towards transportation. And then if members would remember, that has been divided on a 60%, 40% basis, and that was hammered out. It took a lot of negotiation to come to an agreement about how all that was to be done, and so we don't need to reinvent the wheel. We need to take care of this, and we ought to be doing it this year. I did, again, carry the legislation to do it this year, but I'm going to support Senator Bach's bill because I think this angel investment credit is so important to grow business in Minnesota that I am going to support this, but I would ask members not to tolerate this again next year. Thank you.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator, would Senator Bach yield for a question?
Oh, yield.
Thank you, Mr. President. And Senator, to understand this, this repeal low-income fuels tax, now you made a comment in your presentation, and I think you were accurate in saying that that's a tax for those folks that are of lower income, obviously, but what was concerning to me, and maybe, and I don't know if you can even answer this, you said that it was put together so poorly when it was passed that there are folks that actually don't drive cars that are getting this refund. Can you tell me how many people there are? Do we just guess on that or have any idea?
Senator Bach.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Ingebrigtsen, I haven't seen that number, and I think the Department of Revenue would only be guessing at that because nobody has ever received this credit yet. 2010 is the first year that people are eligible to receive it. When people are filing their income taxes right now, they're filling in the line and collecting the credit on their 2010, when they're filing now for their 2009 tax 1040 form. So we'll know at the end of this tax filing system. I would be surprised if this is really going to score $30 million, but there's really no way to know right now who's eligible, how many have a car, how many people are going to file for it. I didn't ask the Department of Revenue to score that, so I don't have an answer to that, except that this was language that was crafted over in the House and put on the bill, and the Senate took the bill when it came over and didn't have an opportunity to work on it, so it wasn't, I don't think it quite worked even how the House that crafted it intended it to. There were some oversights in it.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to add my voice to Senator Murphy's and Senator Bonoff's, and I don't need to expand much more upon what they said. They were very articulate, but Senator Bach, I'm on your tax committee, and your chair, and hopefully you'll continue to be chair. So I hope we have your commitment to work in the future to find to make sure that these resources are used where they're most appropriately used. This motor vehicle lease tax, as I agree with Senators Murphy and Bonoff, the people of Minnesota understood them to be used for, and Senator Ortman, who's also on the tax committee. So she and I will commit to working with you, and hopefully we'll have your commitment at some point in the future. You know, this is an important year. We understand the use of this money for jobs purposes, but we need to think about the policies of how we raise money and how we spend it at some point in the future when we have a little more flexibility.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, to Senator Bach, thank you very much for putting in the changes in the TIF districts for the Mall of America in Bloomington. It is going to start a process where there'll be some vertical construction going. It looks like approximately $100 million Mayo Clinic building and another $100 to $150 million hotel building that's been waiting to get started. It frees up the money collected by the Mall of America to expand outside the footprint of the Mall of America so Bloomington can add development and the necessary infrastructure for the rest of the South Loop development. One of the things that these projects aren't going to start immediately, but by having these projects on the books and ready to go, it gives hope to construction workers like myself and the members that I've represented for years, and that's a big plus. They can see the light at the end of this tunnel that they've been in for too long, about not getting paychecks for working instead of unemployment checks. Thanks.
Senator Saltzman.
Thank you, Mr. President, because you have been a leader in this issue as well, and to Senator Bach, and everyone who has carried the Angel Investor Credit and other research development credits over the years. This is a very promising day for Minnesota. As we have looked back at the investments that we have made across the state in our most promising companies, and we have built on our tradition of being a knowledge economy, an innovation economy, it is extremely important today that we reflect on the fact that we've done so much work in these areas to grow those jobs, to grow those ideas, but when we don't have the capital to be able to advance those promising ideas and put them to work in Minnesota, we have potentially failed. And so to everyone who has worked on this bill over the past 3 years that I've been here, to those who worked before me, and especially to those citizens and organizations who have helped craft the language that we are preparing to vote on today, I say thank you. I do want to note this has the support of our Chamber of Commerce, the Business Partnership. It has the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, Life Science Alley, the Biobusiness Alliance, the High Tech Association, and numerous chambers of commerce and also individuals. And I think that reflects a bill that is very much needed. I want to also assure you that in the legislation, there is significant reporting that will be required. There will be an evaluation. And my hope is that when we see those results, as we see those companies begin to grow and put down roots here in Minnesota, that we consider expanding this program, as we have seen our neighbor across the river do in Wisconsin. So to all those who have supported this bill, I thank you, and then I urge your support today.
Mr. President?
Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I'm not encouraging this, of course, but if someone does have an amendment that they are planning on offering to Senator Bach's bill, perhaps this would be the moment to discuss it.
Mr. President?
Senator Dill.
Mr. President, Senator Bach, I have a question if you would yield.
He will yield, Senator Dill.
I'm looking at the handout I've got here on the Historic Structure Rehabilitation Credit, and I don't really quite follow how that actually works. So could you explain to me how that works?
Senator Bach.
Mr. President, Senator Dill, there's the federal government has a historic building tax credit, and there are a number of eligible expenses on a historic building renovation that you can qualify for, and I believe it's a 20% credit. There are a number of things that you can qualify for, that you then receive a tax, a credit towards your federal tax liability. What the bill does is says that if you qualify for the federal credit, you can apply for a Minnesota credit to piggyback on the federal one of an additional 20%. The program is going to be administered through the Minnesota Historical Society, and because people like nonprofits who might want to renovate historic buildings don't have tax liability because they're nonprofit, there's a provision that if you're a nonprofit and you want to renovate a historic building, that you can qualify for a grant, not to the total amount that you would have gotten if it was a tax credit, but to 90% of the amount that a for-profit company would have received in the form of a tax credit. You could receive a grant of 90% of that amount. But it really just piggybacks on the federal credit. So if a developer is eligible for the federal tax credit to renovate a historic building, they then would automatically be eligible for the state one. And there's not a cap on the program. The House had talked until Saturday, had talked about wanting to have a cap on the program. I really felt that this program has the potential to be successful and that we shouldn't limit its effectiveness and the jobs that it might create by putting some kind of an artificial cap on it. It does have a sunset on it, as does the angel investor credit. Both of the credits have extensive reporting requirements, and they also both have a sunset at the end of fiscal year 15. And the reason for that is I think oftentimes we've put tax credits in law, and then once they're there, we just never revisit them. And what a sunset is going to require is that in order for the credit to be taken after fiscal year 15, the program's going to have to be renewed by the legislature and signed by a governor. And I think that puts some accountability into these tax credit programs, that if they're working, I think a future legislature and a future governor will extend them. And if they're not, and the reporting shows that it was an effort that didn't bear fruit and didn't create employment, didn't renovate historic buildings or create new business startups, then I think a future legislature probably will just let them expire. So that really is how they work, and be happy to answer any other questions.
Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. President, I have an amendment, the A-15 amendment.
We don't have the House filed, so we can't amend anything, but I think you're free to discuss it and tell us what it does, so we're ready for it. Why don't you talk to the Senate about what your amendment does, Senator Vandeveer?
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, it's the amendment we saw the other day, and I think this is a good bill, Senator Bach, that you have. What this would do is supercharge it with jobs. It's the nuclear amendment for the nuclear power plant. It would create 1,400 construction jobs to build the plant, 700 permanent jobs. And the construction costs are equal to 10 Twin Stadiums, 6 Viking Stadiums, and it'll pay us back, and it'll allow us to shut down the dirty coal plants. So I'd hope you would consider putting this on the bill, because it would make a good bill better.
Senator Fretter Solon.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Vandeveer, we have had a long discussion about this in the past, but I don't know where you come up with 1,400 jobs. There isn't a company in Minnesota that's ready to build a nuclear plant at this time. And any jobs that would go toward the nuclear plant would be displacing jobs elsewhere, whether it's at the coal plant or at the wind farms or some other type of energy production, hydroelectric dams. I don't see that this is a jobs producer.
Mr. President.
Senator Dill.
Mr. President, members, if Senator Vanderbilt's amendment is the same as the other day, I can't support it, even though I'm very much in favor of removing the ban on nuclear power plants. I believe his amendment has got a provision in there that if the PUC can't locate a site for a new nuclear power plant, then he turns that job over to the governor, the Speaker of the Minnesota House, and the Majority Leader of the Minnesota Senate, and they must find a place to locate a nuclear power plant within about a year, I think a year from this spring, which is really a tall order and very, I've never heard of that method of locating a controversial power plant or any kind of physical structure like that provides part of our infrastructure. So if that's still in there, Senator Vanderbilt, I can't support your amendment.
You have to rebuttal, Senator Vanderbilt.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Prettner Solem, the 1,400 jobs came from testimony in the Energy Committee by the tradespeople. That's what I heard. And so that's where I got the 1,400 jobs. And Senator Dill, if you'd like to patch this up a little bit with an amendment to make it a little more palatable to you, I'm certainly open to that. This is just the first draft, and you know, we could discuss that if that's a real problem, how the plant is sited. But this is a jobs bill, and one that would pay us back, and I think we should consider it. If your only problem with it is how we're siting the plant, then certainly open to suggestions.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would challenge this amendment on germaneness. I believe it's a substantially different subject than the bill in front of us. It's not about nuclear power or energy. And Mr. President, I think we also have a rule about not offering amendments that do not pay for themselves, that put the bill out of fiscal balance. And I believe Senator Vanderveer's amendment could require the state of Minnesota to build a nuclear power plant or to issue an RFP to do that, which could cost Minnesota several billions of dollars. And so there'd be a huge fiscal cost to this amendment, which is not paid for. So I think it's out of order for both of those reasons.
Okay, as you might understand, I can't rule at this point because we don't have the House file over here, but I was paying attention to your argument, Senator Anderson. Anybody further would like to discuss an amendment or two before? We've got about 10, 12 at the desk, so not planning on. Senator Sanjip.
Mr. President, would Senator Anderson yield?
Senator Anderson will yield.
Senator Anderson, I was just reminded, and yes, you're probably correct with respect to, obviously we need money to fund these amendments now, and I'm not sure how it happened, and I'm just asking you, Senator Anderson, if you know, but my understanding was that President Obama provided in some fashion a loan guarantee of $8.3 billion to a nuclear power plant to be constructed in Georgia. So apparently there are some possibilities here with respect to paying for these kind of things. We probably can't book that in this bill, but these things apparently can happen and frankly are happening in Georgia. So it is something to look at. Compliment Senator Vanderburgh for bringing forth an idea. He's consistently good at that.
Mr.
Senator
President,
Anderson.
Was there a question in there for me?
Mr. President and Senator Anderson, well, you being perhaps a little closer to some of this than I am, from the standpoint of energy policy, environment, and so on, I maybe just to affirm that what I just said is accurate, if you can, but I believe it is, and if there is any knowledge with respect to any possible federal money coming our way to, in fact, it wouldn't be necessarily money, it was a loan to, I think, the Southern Company in Georgia, a loan guarantee on $8.3 billion to build a plant. And I think that's the case. If I may be more into this than you, Senator Anderson, but if you are knowledgeable about that, and if I'm incorrect, why, please let me know.
Senator Anderson.
Mr. President, Senator Sanjip, yes, of course you are correct that some loan guarantees have been provided, some federal money to help Georgia build a new nuclear plant, but there's two problems with assuming that solves our problem here today. One is that, first, most importantly, that doesn't pay for the cost of the plant. Georgia and the other states that are in line to receive those loan guarantees are also charging ratepayers large increases before the plants are even built because those loan guarantees do not come anywhere close to paying the whole cost of a plant. And we don't have Senator Vandeveer's amendment in front of us, but I'm assuming if it's the same one that he introduced the other day, it said that if a utility decides they don't want to build a nuclear plant, which would be the case right now, there's no utilities that want to in Minnesota, then the governor would have to go ahead and pick the site, and the PUC would have to go ahead and issue an RFP and to build one, and that means presumably the state would pay the whole cost whether or not we had federal money, and regardless of whether we got that, we would be on the hook for the entire cost, which is would dwarf our budget deficit to think about.
Senator Vandeveer.
Well, members, I think we need a change in attitude here. You guys ever watch Jungle Book? You know who Eeyore is? Oh, poor me. We can't do it. I'm scared. Is that Winnie the Pooh? Oh. I'm scared. Oh, what are we going to do? We can't do it. I think we should be a Tigger. Let's get up and do something. We can do it. It's one power plant. Florida's building five nuclear power plants. This is just one. It's jobs on a jobs bill, a good jobs bill. We'll supercharge the jobs bill and get our people working. There's a lot of reasons not to do it. As long as we have time.
That's a boy.
But there's absolutely two good reasons to do it. Jobs, and unlike the other stimulus stuff, we'll get our money back eventually. So I don't see what the problem is. I don't see what we're scared of. We already have two of them. Even Eeyore would do this if he was here today.
Would do it?
Mr. President.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to address, if we're going to look at this as a jobs bill and you're going to produce 1,400 jobs, I want to know how many jobs we're going to lose for the folks that are going to be building those wind towers and the solar panels. In my district, there's a solar manufacturer that has 30 employees now, looking to increase that to 100 by the end of the year. Those all go away if we're going to have to go and we're going to build nuclear power at this point. You know, where are those jobs going to go? And plus, we need those skilled workers. So if we open this up, where do those workers come? They're going to be outside of Minnesota, not Minnesota workers. They'll be someplace else. So I don't think that this is the panacea that you think it is.
Senator Vanderveer.
Well, Mr. President, Senator Dahl. Oh, no. But here's the deal. It isn't going to cost us any jobs. Remember, we're shutting down up to half the production in dirty coal plants, so there's cleaner air. They can still build the windmills, still do all the other stuff. It doesn't take any of those jobs away. And we are projected to need, 14,000 I'm sorry, 1,400 megawatts by 2024. So I don't see how this would be costing jobs. We'll still be doing all the other things. It takes a few years to build, and it'll get people to work.
Senator Murphy.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, if anybody thinks that nuclear power, building a new nuclear power plant, is going to take away from our endeavors to build solar and wind, they're wrong. Because, you know, we still have this renewable energy standard in the state of Minnesota that says that we have to, by such and such a date, you know, every year you have to apply more and more of your percentage makeup to wind and solar and a few other categories that we deemed being favorable. But the one form of energy that we have in the state of Minnesota that doesn't produce, you know, any carbon at all is nuclear power. And we should be moving in that direction and using nuclear to shut down the dirty coal. And, I mean, that's just as simple as pie. I mean, if you start up a nuclear power plant, you can shut down a coal power plant. That's what we're all looking for. But if you think that you can build enough windmills or solar panels to take this dirty coal off the planet, you're wrong, because that's just not the way that you can count baseload power. Baseload power is coal and you can count some wind as baseload power. But if you have 100 windmills, I think that you can only count like 5 of them as base load. So, because we know the wind doesn't blow all the time and the sun doesn't shine all the time, and until we can create storing mechanisms for electricity, we're not going to be able to use wind or solar or some of these other options as base load. And the bottom load line is, if you got cheap, reliable power, you can create jobs. And nuclear is still a cheap and viable option. You turn it on, it's not, you know, the wind doesn't have to blow, the sun doesn't have to be shining. I mean, it could be in the middle of the night, minus 30, wind howling, you know, minus 80 wind chill, and guess what? That nuclear power plant's still producing power, still sending electricity out there on that line, and guess what? In the middle of winter, that's a good thing. But, you know, this whole debate's getting out of hand. We're talking about a jobs bill here that the governor said he was going to sign if it came to him as Senator Bach negotiated it with him. So if we load it all up with the nuclear one, the coal, removal of the coal moratorium, and 5 or 6 other things, I'm sure the governor's probably just going to turn around and veto it. And then all the work that Senator Bach and Senator Saltzman and a lot of other people did has gone for naught. Folks, we need jobs. This bill that Senator Bach has is going to do that. Let's quit trying to make this a Christmas tree, because if it was, I'd have amendments to fix up Senator Vandeveer's amendment here, make it more palatable so people like myself and Senator Dill could vote for it, and we'd be on our way. But, you know, this nuclear thing and the coal thing, that's an issue for next year, folks.
So we haven't even gotten. Wondering if. What's constituent outreach? Oh, okay, I see, I got it, thank you. Okay, well, you know, maybe that would be a better time for me to order pizza, because really, if they're coming from the tonight, there's going to be tons of food and stuff like that. Probably it's going to go until at least 7:30. I know those things. They always go later. I mean, people leave, you know, after. But those things can go till 8 or 9 easily. If we should just plan to thing on Wednesday, and then I'll just supper thing. Yeah, and we're kind of breaking right now to wait for a house bill to come over. So I'll just give him a double check where you are. Give him a buzz. I'll do it.
Senatorio Pogermiller.
President, I'd move a brief recess to the call of the chair, but I would encourage members to just stick around here. We're just waiting for the House to complete their work. So recess to the call of the chair.
The motion is to recess the call.
I'd like to revert to messages from the House. I would so move.
Senate will come to order. Messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted. House file number 2695, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House.
Senator, first reading of House bills.
House file 2695, a bill for an act relating to economic development, encouraging job creation, allowing tax credits for small business investment and historic structure rehabilitation, etc.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I move that an urgency be declared within the meeting of Article 4, Section 19 of the Constitution of Minnesota with respect to House File 2695 and that the rules of the Senate be so far suspended as to give House File 2695 its second and third reading and placed on its final passage.
Discussion. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Second reading.
House file 2695.
Second reading of House bills. Further discussion. Senator Bach, maybe he doesn't want to talk. Further discussion on the bill. Further discussion on the bill.
Mr. President.
Senator Anderson.
I just want to thank Senator Bach for giving us some hope that the Ford plant will keep running for years to come.
Further discussion. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Mr. Chairman.
House file 20.
Oh, before that, Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just want to know if Senator Bach would confirm that there were no additional changes other than ones that we were made aware of. I know the House just went through a long process. A lot of amendments were introduced.
Sure. I think that's fair. I think he mentioned a couple of minor TIF changes, but Senator Bach, briefly.
Mr. President, Senator Hahn, there was a small date change that was of technical in nature. There was some conflicting language in one of the articles where it said shall in one paragraph and may in the next that conflicted to each other, so the may was taken out, just a drafting issue, and shall was placed there. They added the word agriculture as one of the permissible uses under the Angel credit, and they put a provision in that said none of the provisions in the bill could be used to finance a stadium, but they were all pretty insignificant.
Further discussion. Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
House File 2695, a bill for an act related to economic development, encouraging job creation.
Secretary, will Senator Marty.
Mr. President, just wanted to speak briefly about a concern about the direction of the bill, because the bill is, I mean, the angel investor credit. I've been listening to the debate here earlier and along the way, and everybody talks how wonderful this is. And one of the difficulties is, I think, according to the House research paper on this, it looks like we have about $80 million a year or so in angel investor credits that might qualify for this. And this bill will be $11 million a year worth of credits, which if it's one quarter credit, it seems to me that that's about $44 million worth of money that will match. And since that money is already being, the investors are already making those investments, in effect, we're giving them a 25% tax credit for doing it. It strikes me that before we ever encourage any more investors, the money's already used up. And the reason I mention that is because if it's, I think the cap you had per person is $125,000 in effect in tax credit, and a couple would be, you'd have to be a pretty big investor in order to get the maximum, but if you were a $1 million investor, a couple making lots of small investments in these businesses, which we do want to encourage, but the bottom line is they'd get a tax break of $250,000, and I realize a lot smaller investors can get the money as well, but the trouble is that, first of all, most of these credits are going to be going to people who are already making the investments, and I'm not sure how that's going to help more people do so unless they get in there real quickly, and those who aren't getting the credits decide to do it anyway. But again, the fuel tax credit we're taking away from, we don't know how much it's going to be used, but it is a low, we're in effect taking tax, increasing taxes, taking away a tax credit for low-income folks, giving it to fairly well-off, largely fairly well-off investors. It's something we do want to encourage, but I just think over the years we've too many times back since Ronald Reagan decided we were going to cut taxes for wealthy and somehow it would all trickle down and we'd create a lot of jobs. And I know Senator Bach has, there are lots of good provisions in the bill. I like especially the thing where local governments can work with their, can provide the money for energy efficiency and energy improvements and so on. But I guess I've just wanted to say I'm frustrated that I think Senator Langseth's bill last month was a jobs creation bill. I think that really will create jobs. I hope this does some too, but I think we've been trying the idea of cutting taxes for people who have a lot of money in the past, and that's going to somehow, they'll spend money in ways that are going to create lots of new jobs, and I just don't think it's working. And at a time when our budget's so stressed, putting that much money into these tax credits, I'm not sure is the best way to do it.
We'll take the roll. Pappas. All senators having voted, desire to vote. Secretary will close the roll. There being 58 ayes, 3 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Senator Bach.
Mr. President, I move that Senate File 2568, number 77 on general orders, be stricken and laid on the table.
On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Pogemiller, that cleans up the desk here.
I would hold for announcements then.
Announcements of Senate interest. Without objection, Senator Chaudhry, 8:30 to 9:20. Torres Ray, 8:30 to 9:10. Senator Johnson from 8:30 to 9:35. Erickson Ropes from 8:30 to 9. Koch from 11:05 to 11:10. Ortman from 11:05 to 11:10. Rest from 12:85 to 12:40. 12:35 to 12:40. Anderson from 8:30 to 9. Senator Cohn from 3 o'clock to the end. Senator Rosen from 3:20 to the end. Senator Latz from 3:50 to the end. Senator Phoebe from 3:50 to the end. Senator Pappas from 3:50 to the end. And Senator Boniff from 3:50 to the end. These are excuses, of course. Any further discussion? Senator, seeing none, Senator Pogemiller.
Mr. President, I move the Senate adjourn till Tuesday, April 6th, 12 noon. Tuesday, April 6th, 12 noon.
On the motion to adjourn, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The Senate stands adjourned.